Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 301. I'm your host, John Reardon, and Neil is out sick this week, but lucky for me, I am joined by two of our most regular guest hosts, Alex DeFritis and Matt Zawadniak. Howdy, fellas.
Howdy, howdy.
Hey.
We are going to, well, in a little bit, our main course is going to be on popular Nintendo game Halo Infinite. But first, Matt actually played something on a real live Nintendo system, I guess it didn't start on a Nintendo system, so it still fits with our theme of not talking about Nintendo stuff.
Oh, for sure. This was actually, to my understanding, a PSP game. This is from 2010, the original Danganronpa. Subtitle Trigger Happy Havoc. So it's like a massive cult classic video game.
Yeah.
That originally gained its popularity in the West through a Let's Play on like the website Something Awful, where it was just a text and screenshots Let's Play where a guy was basically just translating the entire game. And that's actually how a few people that I know got into it. And it's funny, like, the biggest Danganronpa fans that I know have never actually played the original, because that Let's Play, before it was available in English, is how they went through the first one. And then years later, it finally came to America, and now it's on Switch for the first time, for the 10th anniversary, I believe. And so Danganronpa is, it's a murder mystery visual novel. I would say kind of very similar to Phoenix Wright in a few ways, but tonally way, way darker.
Yeah.
It takes place in a high school that has been converted into a killing game, where 15 students were brought together, and in order to leave the school alive, which is called graduating, in this context, in order to graduate, they must murder another student and get away with it. And so periodically, someone will die. And then you have X amount of time to investigate. And then you are brought into a class trial where everyone gets together and tries to figure out who the murderer is. If the murderer gets away with it, then they graduate, leave the school, and everyone else is executed. And if the murderer is caught, then only they will be executed. So it's a little bleak.
Yeah.
But I think it's not entirely without storytelling merit. And I would say that it has a lot of, I got to talk about the story itself a lot, because obviously it's a visual novel. The story is like the whole thing. But I would say that there is a lot of merit to the themes that it's going for, of despair, and specifically how despair is caused and what it means, and what it means to have hope in the face of despair. And unfortunately, it is not nearly as well written as some other murder mystery games, like Ace Attorney is one that I keep bringing up.
Sure.
Because your point of view character, his name is Makoto Naegi. Although this game got an English dub way before anyone knew how to pronounce Japanese names, so it's Makoto Naegi, which the Japanese pronunciations in this game are wild, because you've got another character named Byakuya, who they call Byakuya.
Oh, yeah.
But the problem with Makoto is that, oh my god, he is terrible. And he's your point of view character. And I swear to God, he doesn't have object permanence. So there were countless moments in the story where not only was I picking up on things faster than he was, but also, like, the game was specifically telling me things that he was just ignoring or forgetting. And then, like, 20 minutes later, he would have to discover it again.
Something I noticed watching Let's Plays of this game is that it is constantly reminding you of things you already heard.
The game has absolutely no confidence that you know what's going on whatsoever.
And is this a localization issue, or is this a like original text issue?
It's an original text issue, but the localization doesn't help.
Sure.
Gotcha. And there's actually a big problem. I just finished the game tonight, and I don't want to like give any plot details away, but way at the end of the game, you get a big revelation. And the game really heavily foreshadows this. Like, you are going to know about this before it happens. Like, hours before it happens, you will figure it out. Straight up. And it finally comes to the surface. And it, and like, from there on, 30 fucking minutes are dedicated to explaining what you already know to the characters. And it takes literally a half hour for them to grasp these basic details that you already know. And then someone says, well, wait, how did that happen? And and then the response is, that's not important. The important thing is it happened. And then we move on.
Don't worry about it.
And is there a way to like skip text? Like, is
no, because part of, well, you can, but the problem is that part of it is also the gameplay of figuring it out. And just like the entire game has this massive problem where it has so much more potential than it lives up to.
Gotcha.
Because there are really great things going on, and some of like the murders that you're solving are genuinely pretty cool. But like literally from case one, there was a big moment where I saw it going in a particular direction, and I thought that direction that it was going in was really, really cool. And then a character looks directly into the camera and says, that's not what happened.
Oh, man.
like the game, it's rough. But I still understand why it was so popular. Because there was really, in 2010, there was really nothing that was willing to be this kind of game. Mm-hmm. And I respect that a lot. And the entire time that I was playing, I was like live blogging to my friends, basically, that have played the game. And they were like desperately pleading with me, like, the sequels are better. I promise they're so much better. And I believe them. So I'm still going to play the sequels. And from what I understand, the sequels have separate characters. Like, it's like an anthology series. So you could just jump right into the sequels if you want. But my friends also said not to do that. And I don't know why yet. So I don't know. The only thing I know for certain is don't watch the anime adaptation of the first game because it is terrible.
Okay.
And it's just overall, it's a the story is a problem of it does so many things right that the massive things it does wrong are so disappointing because
sure,
there's a great game somewhere in here that it just never really manages to be. And it's also, I gotta give a warning on this because no one warned me about this. There's some things in there that haven't aged great. Like, sure. At one point, as the solution to a puzzle, I am putting in a slur.
Mm. Oh,
like
that's good.
An ableist slur.
Like you have to type it into the game?
Sort of. You need to shoot the letters and fill in like a hangman board, but you are literally spelling out this word. And it wasn't commonly accepted as a slur back then.
Sure.
But it is now, and it's no one warned me about that.
Yeah.
And it's weird that no one warned me about that.
And it's weird that they didn't fix it for this release.
They definitely didn't, no. And personally, I think this localization was made in like 2016, which like 2016.
Yeah, they should have been fixing it by then.
Yeah, the way it's a term for someone with dissociative identity disorder.
Okay.
And they say the word, they say the phrase dissociative identity disorder in the game, by the way. So they are explicitly using this to refer to that mental condition.
So like they know what they're doing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like in 2016, you probably should have known better.
Yeah.
But I just got to put that out there because no, that really caught me off guard. And
who's the publisher on Danganronpa?
Publisher, I forget. I know the developer is Spike Chunsoft.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not. It's NIS. I was going to ask if it was like Atlas or something because that would explain just the total. Yeah. Disregard for social awareness.
Yeah, and mind you, the gameplay also is pretty good. Because it is a game much like Ace Attorney, where you're going around investigating and solving this mystery, but it kind of takes the gameplay a step further than Ace Attorney, where instead of like the slow methodical cross examinations, it's called, they call it nonstop debates, where characters are giving out dialogue in real time with voice acting, and you need to jump in with the evidence that proves there's a contradiction as they are saying it. And it forces you to kind of be more active in it and pay more attention, because while it does let you repeat the dialogue, there's a time limit ticking down where if it runs out, you fail. And it kind of pressures you to be paying more attention to the details of the case so that you can spot the contradictions right away instead of tracking them down. And
yeah,
sometimes it really flops on that, because I cannot count the number of times where I knew exactly what I was supposed to figure out, but I couldn't determine how the game wanted me to say it.
Right. Yeah.
But for the most part, it adds a lot more tension, and it makes things more dynamic, because it's not quite as formulaic, and it feels like the story has more room to really go in any direction, because it's not a formal cross-examination. It's just a gameplay framing device for the discussion that is happening.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're in a rhythm game.
Yeah.
Because there are a couple different ways that they spice up the gameplay with mini games. One of them is like the hangman thing that I mentioned earlier, where you're like literally shooting at letters in order to fill out a hangman board to answer a question. And then the other one is this rhythm game that is just terrible. It's just in the middle of a trial, you play a bad rhythm game. And that's how you submit a piece of evidence.
So just like a real trial.
Yes, just like yeah. that.
Where does the difficulty come in? Because I know there's different difficulty options.
Yes, there are two difficulty options that you get. One is for logic, which is whenever you're doing a nonstop debate, it gives you a fixed amount of evidence that you're allowed to try and submit. So instead of using all the evidence you've collected at once, it says these four are what you have. You're going to use one of them. When you're at a higher difficulty, instead it says these six are what you have.
Okay.
And it does that for everything. Anytime that you are deciding what is the correct answer, it gives you more possible options. And then the second form of difficulty is the action difficulty, which is like, how hard is the rhythm game? How hard is Hangman's Gambit? That kind of thing.
Mm.
I played on the highest difficulty for both. And I would say that for logic, I would definitely put it at the highest difficulty. And for action, it wasn't difficult, but it was definitely bad. So,
yeah.
Maybe just put that on the lowest difficulty so you don't really need to interact with it that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But yeah, it's just overall, I really want to say that I like Danganronpa, because once it really got going, I did feel this sense of urgency where I wanted to know what was happening next. And I wanted to be able to read more about this story. I wanted to be able to talk to people about it. And it did do some things that I thought were really cool. And it did have a couple characters that I really thought were great. But on the other hand, it's just so many places where it fails to live up to its own potential. And I believe my friends when they say that the sequels mitigate that a lot. Because everyone tells me the second game improves on this a lot. And then V3 is incredible from what I hear. So,
gotcha.
Cool.
I'm going to keep going, and I look forward to that a lot. And I wouldn't even necessarily say that the first game you should skip it. It's just like, it was really frustrating, and you're not really going to get that feeling of, wow, Danganronpa is incredible from it nowadays.
Sure.
But you would say it has the like carrot on the stick, you page turner quality to it.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. When it seems like if you were going to play it, if you're going to play it at all, you'd want to play it before the ones that are better.
But yeah,
it's always sure. easier to start with the weakest one.
And I am getting the feeling that even though it's an anthology series, they are connected in some way. So I have not played the sequels, so I can't say for sure.
The little bit I know about the second one, I think does have some ties into the first one.
And I also need to say, wow, the Switch port sucks.
Oh, no.
The Switch port's terrible.
How can it be? What can be bad about it?
Yeah, why is it running a PSP game poorly?
So I don't know. Like, the frame rate is fucked, which it's a visual novel. How is that possible? But the frame rate is bad.
Is it the so like for when you're between conversations in this game, you're like in a first person wandering around this school. Is that where the frame rate issues come in, or like do they show up in conversations somehow?
So they show up there. And like when I was first playing that, oh my God, that is hilariously bad.
Wow.
Like it the frame rate's terrible. The controls feel like someone tried to do GoldenEye on N64 from memory.
Yeah, I mean, that almost makes, like, I don't know how it controlled on a PSP, but that almost makes sense.
And your character's, like, your visual point of view is, like, at crotch level from everyone else. So you're walking up to someone to talk about them, to them, and you go straight up to their crotch.
And I think that's consistent with the original.
Oh, yeah, that is.
Maybe the main character is just kind of short, you know?
Maybe, but
he does appear childlike.
The big problem is that, like, in those nonstop debates that I mentioned, the way that you are, like, the way that you're interfacing with it is, it's like a shooting game. You're aiming at the word that is the contradiction and shooting at it. And there are pretty significant frame rate issues there as
well. Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's 2D.
Yee.
Do we know if there's a problem with the sequels as well in terms of frame rate, or is it just the first one?
So Joe is on the review for Danganronpa 2, and he says that he has not encountered any of the problems that I have talked about.
Okay.
Which includes the problems to the text, where I have noticed that anytime there is a percent symbol, like, say, for instance, someone saying 100%, the sentence stops there. The text box fails to load past that.
Oh.
So, like, I actually, like, posted a bunch of examples at on Twitter, but let me just send one of them to you guys. But it's like this is what it looks like, and you would be surprised how often a percent symbol comes up in this.
They claim their patties were 100.
So it doesn't even load the percent symbol.
Yeah,
no, and let me just quote a particular line of dialogue if I can find it here, because this one was like unreadable. Okay, so direct quote. You know, only a chosen few, perhaps one, for the other 99. And then the conversation goes on from there.
Okay. Well, I think we learned a lot today.
And what I am understanding is that the Switch port is based off of the iOS version, which had this bug when it launched a year ago.
So, like, based off version 1.0 of the iOS version.
No, it still has that problem.
Oh, it's still, they haven't fixed it?
Nope.
That's a bad sign. They're not going to fix it on Switch either.
No. They sure
They don't
not,
even
no.
know. They didn't test it.
And there was also, this only happened once, but there was one moment where the dialogue said, think about your friends, next text box, think about your family. And the voice acting reversed them.
Oh.
And from what my friends told me, that is also a new problem in the Switch version, which, how does that happen?
Right. I mean, that's just got to be a file.
Yeah.
You're not rewriting the game every time.
Yeah. And that the one guy on YouTube that's Let's Playing the iOS version has not gotten that far. So I don't know if that was in the iOS version. But
yeah,
it's like, it's baffling that the Switch version is this bad.
Isn't there a functional PS3 version?
Yeah, I mean, this is on Steam, it's on PlayStation 4,
okay.
It's on Vita, if for some reason you still have a Vita. So, there are plenty of options to play Danganronpa, and I think this is the worst one.
It's weird that just for the Switch version, they would go with that. Were there, like, enhancements to the iOS version, like new art or something, or?
I don't think so.
That's bizarre.
I have no idea.
I'm dangerously close to selling my physical copy.
Well, that's from what I've heard, 2 is fine.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't know. Do we have someone on the review for V3? I don't even know.
I don't think we do. Do you want it? You want to just skip 2 and go straight to V3?
I mean, I can't get you a review quick, but if you don't mind waiting until I play Joe's Steam copy of 2, I will totally take V3.
I mean, yeah. It's listen. If nobody else is jumping at it, then take it at your leisure.
100%. I mean, Joe might fight me for it, but like I will. Totally take that if it's up for grabs.
You guys could just take it and stream it together.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, just do that.
That'd take forever, but that's a good idea.
Yeah, it'll keep you busy for a while.
But yeah, Danganronpa, I feel like if I was playing on not the Switch, I would probably trend towards like a 6 or a 7. But because of how bad the Switch version is, it might be a 5.
That's too bad. Mm. So yeah, worth playing, but maybe somewhere else.
Yeah.
Maybe just read the Something Awful.
Well, so the Something Awful Let's Play, from what I've seen, probably has a better localization. Because the official localization for Danganronpa, it is professional quality, but it's weird in that it explicitly takes place in Tokyo. All of the characters have Japanese names, and they have attempted to make the script as not Japanese as possible.
You gotta make the obviously anime visual novel appear to a wide Western audience.
Well, geez. It's every character that doesn't have an easily pronounceable name to an English-speaking audience has a nickname that was invented by the localization. So, like, there's one character whose name is Aoi Asahina, and she was given the nickname Hina. Mm-hmm. And there's a character named Yasuhiro Hagakure, who is called Hiro. There's a character named Mondo, who his name is just pronounced wrong. It's pronounced Mondo. So it's weird in that they kept in that it is Japanese, but this was the one that really confused me. There's a character who is called the Ultimate Fanfic Writer. Every character in Danganronpa is the ultimate something.
Yeah.
And he's called the Ultimate Fanfic Writer. And in Japanese, he's like the Ultimate Doujin Artist, because a doujin is basically a fanfic comic. But because in America, the word fanfic means like literature. For what, mm-hmm. I mean, as much as you can call fanfiction literature, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
And at a certain point in the game, they just start talking about like how he's drawing panels. And it's like, wait. Oh. I'm confused here.
So it's like half localized.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
They made it more confusing. Yeah. So it's.
So they've gone the Ace Attorney route where they just set it in LA for no reason.
I mean, it might be less confusing. There's also like a major change that they make in the end game that like legitimately changes the tone of the entire game.
So makes it really. Like, it turns out everyone lived. It was plot twist.
It's more. It's the motivations of why everything happened.
Yeah,
and it's like it legitimately changes the tone of completely everything. So, yeah.
Well, neat.
It's a very I feel very complicated about Danganronpa.
Yeah, no, I get that, where like you come to an end of a review game and where you kind of liked it better than the score you would give it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. But speaking of things that I liked better than the score that some people gave them.
Okay.
Halo Infinite came out last week.
Hey, that's almost a segue.
Yeah, well, it was supposed to be. That was kind of what I was aiming for.
Yeah, I don't know, I've been playing Halo Infinite for like a month. So
yes, well, that's okay. Yeah, I should clarify. The Halo Infinite campaign came out last week, adding on to the already free-to-play multiplayer. So for a certain type of Halo fan, Neil, nothing happened last week.
Mm-hmm.
For another kind of Halo fan, Halo came out last week, and that other thing was like a demo. So I know. Matt, you and I have done multiplayer. You've done some of the campaign. I've finished the campaign. And Alex, have you done any of the campaign or just the multiplayer?
I got to the point where Master Chief gives a pep talk to a pilot. So I've done that much of the campaign.
Okay. After the AA guns?
Yes.
Okay. So I think you're further than I am.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. I'm at the first story mission after you get out of what I would call the tutorial, where it's like you're told, hey, there's this base a couple miles away. Go there. And I started that mission, got about, I would guess, halfway through it because it was like 2 a.m. And I was like, I got to go to bed. It's probably it just auto saves. So I'll probably be able to pick it up right here.
Yeah.
And then a couple days later, I loaded it back up and I was back at the beginning of the mission. I was like, you know what? I don't want to do this right now. And that's where I am now.
Are you in the mission or are you outside in the open world again?
I am outside in the open world.
Okay. Yeah, so that, Alex, are you playing on PC or on Xbox?
I'm playing on PC.
Okay. So I feel like from talking to Matt that my experience has been slightly different with this game than his. And I think a lot of that comes down to what platforms we're playing on. It seems like my perception so far of the campaign has been that maybe it was designed to be played on the Xbox Series systems with their suspend feature, and like they just didn't really make a plan for if someone was on PC and had to close the game. They didn't test for that.
In fairness, that's most games, but I still feel like
the autosave should be a save, though.
Yeah, like what if I want to play a different game?
Yeah.
And that's why Returnal was such a big problem when it launched on PS5, because it didn't have a suspend mode. Their official response was, well, you could just suspend the console. And it's like, what if I want to play a different game?
I do have a question for Matt. How far in that in that mission did you get?
I was about to go down the elevator, like into the thing.
But you didn't go into the elevator?
No, I didn't actually get inside. No.
This is the tower, right? The tower mission?
It should be. There was like
I think a better way to frame the question is, did you shoot a bunch of enemies and then something activate and then you hear like a boss talk over the loudspeakers?
Yes.
Okay.
That did happen.
That happens like every 5 minutes in the game.
That's true.
I did not go into the thing. That is right. I was going into the thing and that was when I was like, it's 2 a.m. I got to go to bed.
Okay. I think the thing might be still activated if you go back to the tower.
Interesting. I will have to try that out.
All right.
Yeah, since we're already kind of talking about the campaign, what are you guys' just kind of overall, like, you guys haven't finished it yet, but what are your general impressions so far, maybe, like, in comparison to the other Halo games? Because this is a very different, like, this is an open world game.
Yes.
So it's a very different kind of game. What are your just initial impressions thus far?
I'm going to say that in some ways it reminds me of when Yakuza 7 came out. Because Yakuza 7 was a drastic departure. It was Like a Dragon.
That's the turn-based RPG one, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
It's obviously a drastic departure from like what I would say is what I want out of the franchise. But it came out and it was beloved. People loved that game. I hated it, but that's not important. people love Yakuza Like a Dragon, even though it's not the Yakuza that they already loved. And that's kind of where I'm at with the campaign for Infinite. I think it's not really what I want out of Halo. I'm kind of disappointed that I didn't get a game that was what I want out of Halo. But I think the game that I got is real good.
Sure.
And that's where I would say my basic thoughts are right now.
Alex, how about you?
So I had already played quite a bit of multiplayer before jumping into the campaign. And I was upset that the first like hour and a half was just corridors of fighting aliens, and I wanted to be in the open world because that was going to was different.
The first two missions are very much just a Halo game.
Yeah, yes. Which to that extent, I think we had like the opposite response to that.
Yeah,
I was feeling like, oh man, this is I love this, and this is going to go away.
Yep.
Now, I will say, Matt, as you get farther, it really gets to the point where what I felt it was doing, like there are definitely some missions that happen on the overworld, but a lot of the times you'll be playing and it'll be like, go do this mission, which you need to get into, like go through a door, and then through that door there's a totally normal Halo level.
Yeah, it just
and you
loads
play that
in a
level
Halo
and
level.
Then come back out into the open world.
Right. That sounds
so
pretty good.
I think it might get better for you as you go, because that was also the impression I got from like early previews. Like, because a lot of the early previews were like, yeah, it starts like Halo and then it's something totally different. And then once I'm like actually playing, I'm like, okay, it starts like Halo, and then it's Halo with an overworld to go to the different missions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that overworld is a little more successful than I thought it was going to be. It's still definitely like I'm playing it and I'm like, oh, this feels like, it feels like The Witcher. It feels like Assassin's Creed. It feels like all those games, but Halo fits into that better than I thought it would.
Yes. Yeah. It works better than it maybe should. Especially for a first attempt.
I would argue that Halo kind of doesn't fit into the open world. Have you guys ever played Ghost Recon Wildlands?
A little bit. Yeah.
I have not.
Okay, so I think that game takes a lot of cues from MGS5, but it has like a squad basically that you can kind of point to and like have them set up different infiltrations, have them like fire at different enemies. So there's a lot more in the open world that you can do. You can kind of call in vehicles. You can use a drone to set up how you're going to initiate an attack on a base. And Halo really just wants to have little skirmishes that are all just arenas for Halo fights. But instead, you just kind of like zip around to them with the grapple hook. And the grapple hook is great. It's fantastic. It's like the best part of the game. I love moving around in Halo Infinite. But at the end of the day, like, you are just going from arena to arena, and all of the combat happens within like short range to medium range. There's very little long range use case in this game. There's very little you can set up with the Marines that follow you around. You can't really order them. You just kind of have to wait for them to hop into your Warthog. There's very little that you can actually do to set yourself up for success before jumping into a base or some kind of fight. And then there's very little that you can do to like progress in the macro sense of an open world. There's some Spartan cores which help you upgrade 5 abilities, of which you're probably going to use like 2 or 3. And then other than that, like, you can get valor points, which unlock like weapons that you can get at FOBs, which are the outposts in the overworld. But like, you don't need those weapons. You're going to find them some other way.
The valor points do also unlock, they spawn Marines at the FOBs and will allow you to spawn vehicles. Which I does also give you a little bit. It's, I get what you're saying. It's definitely, it's not tactical. But you can say, you know, I'm going to go attack this banished base. I'm going to load up a Razorback with 5 other Marines.
Yes.
And we're going to just roll it. But yeah, it's not tech. It's loyal to, and they've said this before, where like one of their big inspirations is like the second level of the first Halo, where it's just kind of this big area. You drive around in a Warthog rescuing Marines, and any of them that survive hop into your Warthog and you go rescue the next ones. Yep. And they've taken that and made an open world out of that.
But so I wish I could point the Marines and like tell them, hey, get it in my car, not like have to chase them around and hope and like pray to God that they'll catch on to my cues that I have a Razorback for them to get into. Because they're actually incredibly useful to take into missions because, you know,
the Razorback can be the most, like, you get a bunch of Marines with rocket launchers in the back of the Razorback and you are a death ball.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's loyal to the behavior of, like, the original Halo Trilogy Marines to a fault. Mm-hmm. Because there have been other Halo games that have squads with proper squad commands and behavior. Like, Halo 5 has
one?
Right, Halo 5 has a legitimate squad system where you can give them orders and send them to attack certain enemies, and they can, like, revive you if you go down. But I think they were, like, and this kind of makes sense, it feels like they were kind of treating a lot of the gameplay of 4 and 5 like it was Poison. And very much wanted to, like, okay, what made the original Halo trilogy feel like the original Halo trilogy? We need to do that. To the point of losing some of the stuff that actually worked really well in the later games.
In some ways, I'm sure it's regressed.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree.
Though I should state that, I said all of that, but like, the core mechanics are incredible. The shooting is really good.
Right.
Movement's fantastic.
That's the other thing about going back to very classic feeling Halo, is that it feels like classic Halo, which plays great. Yeah. So it's you still have like that core experience is good. But like, despite this game being very modern in its approach to like open worlds and stuff, there's those elements of it that feel like they're from 2003.
Yeah.
Which is kind of bizarre.
So I spent like all of Saturday just playing in the open world, you know, getting my valor up, trying to unlock things, trying to make myself more powerful for the next mission. And then I realized, I'm not sure if this is doing anything. I think I should just be playing through the campaign missions and you know, enjoy my time with it. But I'm not sure if the open world is adding that much.
The open world definitely, I would say, the side stuff in it, I did think that I was already feeling that it was very Ubisoft in the way they yes. do their open worlds, where it's just like, okay, I'm gonna go over there because there's an icon on the map there. Yep. So that, I guess that's a thing that I gotta do.
And very then, Ghost Recon.
And then here's the thing I gotta do. Okay, I did the thing. I don't totally have context for what I got for doing the thing, but all right, like I got like a stamp to go put on my stamp book that I'll give to Cortana later.
Posted on Miiverse.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what it feels sometimes.
And Halo in these, crawl.
In these mm-hmm. like in these open world games, it's like, okay, I see all these millions of things that I need to do on the map, and every time I go do one, it's like, oh, cool, I got a 1% upgrade to like my shields, I guess. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's I went there because I was told I would get something good for doing it, and I technically got something, but I didn't feel like I got something.
Right.
And that I know we're going to be talking about Breath of the Wild later, but the thing about Breath of the Wild kind of ruined open world games for me is that in Breath of the Wild, you don't go anywhere because there's an icon on your map. You go there because you saw it and it looks cool.
Yeah.
And then, ooh, here's a thing to do. I'll do that thing. Oh, I got a sword that I'm going to throw away because it's useless, but I saw a cool thing that was neat. And I feel like most open world games don't have that feeling of intrinsic value of I'm going to do this because I think it looks neat. They're relying on extrinsic value, where you're going to go there because you'll get a thing for filling out the icon. And that extrinsic value very rarely lives up to the promise, which just kind of leads to me feeling like, oh, well, this just isn't worth it. I'm just going to skip it now.
Yeah, and what's interesting is I think that the rewards you get in something like Breath of the Wild aren't better than the rewards you're getting in Halo Infinite. It's just that since they're a surprise, you have no expectations of them.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, in a lot of cases, I would say the rewards in Breath of the Wild are worse because it's literally sure. just like I throw them away half of the time.
Right.
But I don't mind because that's not why I was there.
Right, yes. And what's unfortunate is I do feel like Halo Infinite, I think the world design from like a purely just like a layout visual design level is really good. Like it's a world that I want to wander around and the grapple hook makes it fun to explore.
Yes.
But yeah, if you tell me where everything is, like the best experiences I've had is going into a new area where I don't have any of the fobs taken yet so that I don't have anything on my map. Because then you will occasionally just wander in and be like, oh, there's an upgrade, or oh, there's Marines in trouble. Like,
yeah.
And you do kind of get a little bit of that experience, not intentionally, but it happens.
Well, the unfortunate thing there is, though, that the FOBs give such a distinct gameplay bonus to them.
Yes.
That you can't really ignore them.
I feel. I mean, you could. Like, I don't know that. You might have to capture like the first one or something, but I'm pretty sure you could play through the entire game without ever taking one.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you could, but you would be handicapping yourself. And that's kind of where it's like,
I don't know that you would that much, because all you're getting from them, like, it's a chance
you're getting
to reload.
A warp point. Yeah.
Yeah. You're getting a fast travel point, which I forgot existed for most of the game. But
and you're
all
peppering
you're really
the
getting
map
is
with icons. It's basically like a tower in a Ubisoft game where once you activate the NFOB, then that part of the map showcases some icons for.
But unlike an Assassin's Creed or something, like it's not actually generating the map itself. Like you have the map of
yes,
the entire world
the
immediately. So you could do it with just outdoing those. And I don't think you would lose anything.
Well, that's the thing of like you get that fast travel point. You get that point where you can switch your weapons, you can spawn the vehicles. I think that is a distinct improvement in your gameplay abilities. And it's like it's true that you can ignore that, but you are making a choice to make the game a little more difficult in exchange yep. for not having to put up with the icons. And yeah. I do consider putting the icons on the map everywhere. I do consider that to kind of be a bad thing, but sure. I do have to give up what might be a good thing in order to avoid it. And
yeah.
that's where I think kind of the problem is.
Now, I will also say, and I agree with everything you're saying. I will also say that that unlike something like Assassin's Creed, which I feel like Assassin's Creed is like my default, like Ubisoft open world game, right, like this. Mm-hmm. You have a motion tracker, but you don't have a radar. So it's very easy to just ignore your map. Like none of those things, none of those icons are ever displayed on your HUD.
That is super true.
They're not on your, so like, unless you go looking for them, they're not there.
True.
So you could even do the fob still and still play it in that exploratory way. But obviously, like you said, like that's me choosing to make the game into something that I like more, mm-hmm. as opposed to like the game should just be designed like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the option is certainly, I think, there, and it's less. Like when you initially compared it to an Ubisoft game, when like the first night it came out, I was like, I don't really get that. But I think that was because like I wasn't using the map. Like I think you're right.
Mm-hmm.
But it, depending on how you play, I could see you just totally not even associating it with that kind of open world because it's so kind of off to the side.
And I would say the kind of person that I am is that I like to play games on higher difficulties because I want the higher difficulties to force me to engage with all the mechanics.
Yeah.
So when I look at like a self-imposed challenge to use fewer things in Halo Infinite's open world, that's gaining the symptoms and avoiding the cause, so to speak, of why I like hard games. So
100%.
Let me shoot you a question, John, because you're playing it basically the opposite of how I'm playing it. I'm playing it as, you know, like a Ubisoft game. I'm getting the FOBs. I'm looking at the icons. I pick what I want. A lot of that stuff is honestly the Mjolnir armories, which unlock customization for multiplayer. So I can actually like look different without having to, you know, buy the battle pass.
When you're done, I actually have something I want to ask sure. about that.
Yeah. So when you're engaging with the open world, can you like look out in the distance and see something interesting like you could with like a shrine or enemy encampment in Breath of the Wild? Because like the Spartan upgrades, they're hard to find even if you set a waypoint and go to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I found a lot of Spartan upgrades and the cosmetic stuff accidentally.
Okay.
I'm the type of person, like, I think there's a reason that I'm obsessive about like Xenoblade Chronicles X is mm-hmm. I'm the type of person who, if you just give me a big open landscape, I'm going to wander around it aimlessly.
Sure.
I find that fun. But yeah, I do feel like, I mean, if you go up on top of a mountain, I'm playing it on a different system, but I assume if anything, your guys' experience is probably technically better than mine. Like if I go up on top of a mountain, I can look out and I can see, okay, there's some enemy bases. If I can't always like have the draw distance to see like specific enemies if they're really far out, but I can pretty much always see like, okay, that looks like a camp. There's like clearly some supplies laying around there. There might be an upgrade point or a cosmetic item sitting in there that I could go find, or a data pad or something.
And you know what Halo Infinite needs is like the Sheikah Slate from Breath of the Wild or the Eagle from Assassin's Creed, where you can just kind of like, you know, look through some binoculars and find stuff.
Yeah, even Ubisoft's Immortals kind of got that part right, where you can just look out and see things and put waypoints just on what you see.
I love the Immortals tower system because it's Ubisoft trying so hard to understand why Breath of the Wild worked and not quite figuring it out.
It was like, the worst.
Like it's like, go up to this tower. We're not going to fill in your map like Ubisoft will. No, instead you can spin slowly mashing the A button until you mark all the things.
It was like the worst.
And so it's, yeah. So I don't know. I would like something, like the Sheikah Slate, where you look through it and then you can just push A and drop a beacon on whatever you're looking at.
God, I forgot that's how Immortals... I literally locked that out of my mind. Oh my God.
Immortals, I think you like Immortals more than I do.
I don't think I like it, to be honest.
Oh, I remember you liking it, but... Maybe I'm misremembering.
I think I remember
I know you like
liking
the combat
it
more than Breath of the Wild's combat.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know that I gave it a positive review and liked it at the time, but every time I've like had the game described to me since then, I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with this game?
Yeah, it has moments where it's like this. It's a pretty accurate Breath of the Wild clone with just a lot of Ubisoft layered on top. So like the parts of it that are Breath of the Wild are pretty good. But then there's also a thick old layer of Ubisoft on there.
I think I know we shouldn't like hang too long on Immortals, but like I'm thinking back and like I think like literally I checked my footage to see how long it took to do that slow spin, and it's like every time you get to a tower, it's just literally like 3 whole minutes just sitting there slowly spinning.
Oh yeah, well, and you have to do like the verticality too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you have to do like a sine wave, just mashing the button to find them all, and they're like, oh, you can track them with the sensor. It's like, no, man, I'm just gonna wildly aim and push the button until they all appear.
So yeah, that's what Halo Infinite needs.
Yeah. Yeah, but let's, you know what? Let's touch on Breath of the Wild.
Oh, can I say some closing thoughts about the open world?
Yeah.
I still think Halo Infinite's open world is so much fun as just a sandbox.
Yeah.
Where the movement and the grapple hook and just like finding a grunt and listening to him, you know, have funny banter with the other grunt and then just melee them into oblivion is very, very fun.
Yeah.
So though I have like little nitpicks with how these gameplay systems interact with each other, the core is so good that I can't not recommend it. Yeah. If you like Halo.
Yeah, I think it is a good game.
Yes.
And I'm excited.
And probably the best shooting I've ever played. Like, this is the most fun I've had shooting things since the first Splatoon.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd say the best ever, but it's real good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't play a lot of shooters, so there's probably something that I've missed. That was probably Doom Eternal. It's really good. But
I do think this is the best Halo that 343 has ever made.
Sure.
Yeah. Which isn't the highest of bars, but I think it's definitely a step in a good direction for them.
It's definitely, if this game was in the Master Chief Collection, I would not make a joke about it being Russian roulette for it being in my rotation, which is currently why Halo 4 is in my rotation on Master Chief Collection.
Just to punish yourself occasionally.
Speaking of which, they fixed the sprint. The sprint doesn't feel like it
breaks.
Yeah,
I like the sprint.
Game. It's a good sprint.
I think it's
slightly fast enough to make you feel like you're moving, but it's not, you don't have to change the way maps are altered.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, I like it. But Matt, you had a question about cosmetic items earlier that I skipped over.
Yeah, so this is actually, I don't know if this is like a question that really has any value, but it's one that I'm very curious about because there's like a minor controversy about it. Where the cosmetics that you're unlocking, are any of them armor cosmetics for multiplayer? Because what I saw was that there was a data mine that said none of the campaign cosmetics are armors for multiplayer. And then when the previews came out from journalists that got to play at like a preview event, some of them were saying there are absolutely multiplayer armors that you can get in the campaign. And then a couple days later, one of them retracted his statement and said, I no longer think this is correct.
Huh. I'm guessing this is a confusion on definition. So I'm pretty sure that every cosmetic is either like there are some that are like the little like things that you can attach to your guns, like little decorational things. Sure. But otherwise, I'm 95% sure they're all paint jobs for either your armor or weapon. So I could definitely hear someone seeing a paint job for armor and then being asked, do you get armor unlocks? And it's like, oh yeah, totally.
Yeah,
you can make your armor red.
Because I remember, I think what specifically what they said about this was the reason that they said that there definitely were armor unlocks for multiplayer was that they opened something called an armor locker, which has been renamed to Mjolnir Locker, but there are still parts of the game that refer to it as armor lockers.
Oh, interesting.
And he opened an armor locker and got something for multiplayer and assumed that he got armor for multiplayer.
Yeah, pallets armor.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't.
And are they even pallet swaps for armors or just for the weapons?
There are palette swaps for armor too.
Yeah, there are ones for armors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Like the armor that I was wearing, or the color that I was wearing last night is from the campaign.
Mm.
Same.
Okay.
But I think the paint jobs are like all for the base armor that you get off the bat, because there are different armor cores.
There
and then
might
different
be
color palettes could be applied to different armor cores. Like they're not universal.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I haven't looked to see if any of them are unlocked on the Mark V or not.
Which, by the way, the core system is the worst.
Yeah, the core system kind of sucks.
It's terrible.
It seems like it's just built for store items so that you could.
It's built. Okay.
Do you guys want to talk multiplayer? We can talk about multiplayer. And
I'll start this off by saying I did actually, on day one, before we realized just how bad everything was in the multiplayer, I got the battle pass because I was like, you know what? It doesn't prey on FOMO. That's cool. I'll get it. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the store and I was like, oh, that armor looks kind of neat. I like that. You know what? It's only $5. You know what? I got this game for free. Let's do it. Sure. And I got it. And then I learned that's when I learned about the core system.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you buy something for a core you don't have?
So no, it's not for a core that I didn't have. It was for a core that I didn't unlock anything for. So I literally couldn't use the color that I just bought without reverting to the defaults.
Okay.
And that was the moment where I was like, okay, fuck Halo Infinite, I guess.
Yeah, I think the multiplayer has been very interesting to watch people's reaction to, because I think what we're seeing is there are two very different kinds of people playing this multiplayer. I think you're right that like the way that the so if you haven't played it, there you can get a battle pass where you unlock stuff as you gain experience and so forth and so forth. But it's very poorly spaced out. Initially you didn't get any experience for just playing games. It was only by doing specific challenges, which were very specific. And so it was just hard to work your way through the battle pass.
And you can't choose your game mode, so
you can as of literally today.
Oh, really?
Yes. Okay. Well, not even then, because you can't choose which kind of big team battle you want. You can't choose oddball.
That's correct.
All you can really choose is like free for all Slayer, Team Slayer. Something called Fiesta, which is just like,
oh, Fiesta's awesome. Fiesta's frantic mode in Mario Kart.
So yeah. There's a half measure. You can't actually choose your specific mode, but like you can choose, hey, I just want to play Slayer.
Right. It's a nice mode to get the people who just want to play Slayer while you're playing oddball out of your server.
Yes.
Yes. And I still don't think it's good enough, because motherfucker, I had a challenge to kill three people with the oddball, and then I played for three straight days without getting oddball once.
Which is a crime, because it's arguably like the best mode.
Yeah. And like you know the Power Seeds mode?
Yeah.
Stockpile, yeah.
I played that game for like the entire launch weekend. I played Infinite Multiplayer for the entire launch weekend, and it wasn't until the following weekend that I knew that mode existed.
Yeah, it feels very random on what you get, and it seems to favor certain things.
Yeah, I think it's like literally random. Like not even like Gambler's Fallacy random, where there's no pity system, to use gacha game terms. Like you can literally go days without playing oddball.
It doesn't take into account the one you just played.
Mm-hmm. And
we shouldn't do that again. Like,
yeah. So, which is crazy, because unlike previous Halo games, it completely kicks you out of the lobby to play with a fresh batch of players. So they don't need to consider like, well, okay, like do we need to get these other players into an oddball match too? We can't really accommodate everyone, but like you totally can accommodate everyone.
Yeah. So, and all of this, I did want to then highlight, and this is not to like, all of those complaints are totally valid, but I do think there's then this other group of which I am a part who could not give a flying crap about unlocking anything and is just playing multiplayer. So you get this very interesting dichotomy of like, of people who are like, this multiplayer system is actively broken. And then people are like, ah, that seems fine to me.
I unlocked a visor and I don't even have the battle pass. It's a weird mismatch of people playing, and the perspective on it is interesting to see develop.
Yeah, and I would say that I am someone that does care about cosmetics in video games. To which end, I would say, like, I don't think it was ever really okay that cosmetics started to become the thing that it's acceptable to nickel and dime and put in loot boxes and everything. Because people say, well, as long as it's not affecting the gameplay, and I say, motherfucker, I'm going to lose anyway. I'd rather gameplay be like that. which I understand is a completely wrong thing to say, but it doesn't stop anyone from going, the thing you like should be locked behind loot boxes. So I think the whole argument is just broken, but like, it,
I mean, I,
even then,
I would say my ideal would be that the multiplayer isn't free and all of the things are obtained through unlocks that are included with the price I paid for the game.
I think I would also prefer that, but
if I had to pick something to put behind a paywall, I would definitely choose armor paint jobs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to put, you know, the assault rifle behind a paywall.
It's just like, this is why I think free to play games are kind of shitty. There's also a deeper level to this where there are just certain models of monetization that I just think are ethically wrong. And loot boxes are one of them. Halo Infinite does not have loot boxes.
100%.
But I also think battle passes can be one of them. I think the Fortnite battle pass, for example, is vicious because it preys on FOMO really hard, because if you miss that stuff, you're just never going to get it again. And also, if you max out the battle pass, meaning play 3 hours of Fortnite every single day for the rest of your life, then you get enough free V-Bucks to buy the next battle pass. So, like, you are actively incentivized to constantly play Fortnite and never take a day off. I think that is actively malicious and an unethical way to design something. And Halo Infinite's battle pass is not time limited, but the Fiesta stuff originally was, including the samurai armors, where, hey, here's 3 specific weeks in the next couple of, or no, it was like 4 or 5 or whatever. I think it was 4 specific weeks in the next couple of months where you're going to have a limited time battle pass, and you need to play constantly to max out this battle pass, or you're not going to get these armors. And the first of those weeks was Thanksgiving weekend. Yeah. So, hey, fuck your family. Come play Halo.
I mean, true.
Well, yeah, but like, that's where it's like, originally when Halo Infinite was like, battle pass is not going to be time limited, there's not going to be any FOMO, I'm like, great. And then they're like, that part is good.
Yeah.
But then they're like, but here's this second battle pass, though. And that one, I consider unethical design. I think that anytime you try to prey on FOMO like that, where you say you have a limited time to do this or it goes away possibly forever, I think that I ethically think that is wrong. And they kind of do that to a lesser degree with the shop, where the shop prices are bad, first of all. Like, $20 for 3 pieces of armor is ridiculous. But it's also, this stuff's going to be here for 1 week. And if you don't buy it now, who knows when the next time it's going to be there is.
Yeah.
And that's just like, I cannot stand that. I think FOMO and the exploitation of FOMO is probably the worst thing that has happened to the gaming industry. And the Halo Infinite sold me the idea that they would never approach FOMO, and then they totally did.
It almost feels like there's 2 different philosophies at play at once.
Mm-hmm. Almost like there's a development team that had some really good ideas for a video game, and then some managers that came in with some spreadsheets.
Yep.
And the sheer speed at which they have responded to criticism, in addition to just being a good thing, also really says that to me. Like, they had ideas right away. This is like the original model for Sonic the Hedgehog in the Hollywood movie, where it's like, okay, no, there is no way that this would have happened this quickly if everyone making this movie didn't already know it was terrible.
Yeah, that had to be going, that there had to be some group of animators somewhere going, all right, we're just gonna have this model ready just in case.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm seeing here, where it's like, people definitely knew that this was going to happen, and they were ready for it. And the realities of game development, I understand they can't just rework the entire progression and monetization system overnight. And I do think that the changes they have made so far are mostly promising.
Yeah, everything they've done so far has been, well, no, except for that almost challenge everything. Swap thing you were talking about today. But everything else has been good.
Yeah, so I feel like optimism is warranted. I was thinking of like the most careful way for me to phrase that is because I'm not confident enough in saying that I feel good about where Halo Infinite is right now, but I think that it is warranted to feel like it could be good later.
Which, yeah, and I wouldn't even, and once again, I'm coming at the multiplayer from a slightly different perspective, but I wouldn't say it's, for me, it's not bad now. Like, I'm having a great time playing multiplayer. And the best time I've had playing multiplayer since Halo 3.
The actual game is good, but everything right. that the game sits in, the shell that it sits in progression-wise.
And that's yeah. the thing where it's like, it's like, okay, do I want game with a kind of crappy progression system that ultimately doesn't affect my gameplay but is stupid, or do I want Halo 4 multiplayer? I'll take the one with the crappy progression system. Like, sure. It's in the context of what we've had before, it's easy to look at this and be like, this is fine. I'll take yeah. this. Not to discount anything wrong with it, but just, yeah.
I could get behind that if it wasn't for the fact that the progression system as it is now wasn't actively incentivizing people to be shitty during the game.
Yeah, yes, that's the
that's
other
a
thing.
Problem. Yes, 100%.
So it is actually affecting the actual game because of that's other fair. People's behavior, because they're going after challenges that detract from the main objective most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, could you supposed to be hunting around for the specific weapon so you can get 3 kills so that you can fill out your battle pass?
Yeah, and there was one point where I had a challenge to get 20 assists, which, first of all, that's a lot. But it was yeah. also, kills don't count. So what I was doing, and this was like, it took me 3 hours to do this, was I was shooting an enemy until they were almost dead, and then walking away, hoping that a teammate would yeah, finish them off.
Just leaving a bunch of weakened enemies around the field.
Mm-hmm. And that didn't work most of the time because someone wasn't nearby.
Yeah.
So it was a matter of, oh, I am actively making a choice to play worse because I just want this challenge finished because they're telling me to do this.
Right. And if you're somebody on your team, then you're just this guy that's like not getting any points and is a real problem for the team.
Yeah,
because you won't quite finish anybody off.
Yeah, and the way that they change challenge swaps now is that if you use a challenge swap, you'll get a different challenge of the same type. So, like, say, for example, you have get 3 kills with the shotgun. If you use a challenge swap on that, it'll be get 4 kills with the Ravager or get 5 kills with the pistol. It will still be get X number of kills with specific weapon. And they also added challenges for playing ranked mode that cannot be swapped away from ranked mode. And yeah. a lot of people really hate playing ranked modes. So,
oh, that's I only play the ranked modes. but yeah, at least I do feel like in ranked mode, there's at least a little bit of an incentive to not lose.
Not if there are challenges incentivizing you to do certain things in rank mode.
Yeah, but then yeah, you're so lowering kinda your rank. Like, there's at least a punishment for it. You know what I mean?
But if you're like us and you don't care about your rank, you just care about the cool cosmetics.
Rank is, it doesn't matter how cool you look if you're a bronze.
I mean, you only care about performing well in ranked for as long as you don't have that challenge to get the cosmetic you want.
Do you really just not play ranked?
I like ranked sometimes. I feel like a lot of games, people get way more toxic in ranked because they care about that number next to their name.
Oh, mm-hmm. I don't, unless I'm playing with like you guys, I default to all voice chats muted. So that solves that problem for me real quick.
Well, then you don't hear the 12-year-old yelling at his older brother because he finally got the weapon he needed for his challenge and then got killed. So he just walks away from his keyboard, which has happened.
In my experience, it's I go into a ranked game and everyone else on my team is speaking Spanish.
yeah, that happens too.
I'm just trying to pick out like individual words to see if there's anything helpful in there.
Well, it helps if you have the speech to text turned on.
Can it translate for you?
I don't know, but I think I personally have better reading comprehension for Spanish than listening comprehension. So
sure, but let's real quick here at the end. I wanted to talk about so today on Twitter it was trending. I think because of both Halo and Sonic Frontiers and lots of other stuff that some of these games appear to take some influence from Breath of the Wild. And then there was another corner of the internet that was very angry that Breath of the Wild had ruined all open world discourse because everyone just compared everything ever made to Breath of the Wild. So I just wanted to take a moment to say that, listen, Breath of the Wild did really well and people really liked it. And it's kind of a benchmark in the history of open world games. And so realistically, any open world game made that went into development after Breath of the Wild came out is going to take influence from it. It's the same, like Grand Theft Auto 5 had the same effect. Skyrim had the same effect. Like this is any benchmark in the history of game design in any genre is going to influence future games in that genre.
Yes. We should probably listen to developers when they say that they've been inspired by Breath of the Wild.
Right. I believe both Halo Infinite and Sonic Frontiers, the developers, have actively said that it's an influence for them. And like, that's okay. And I'm not saying like, oh, Sonic Frontiers is just Breath of the Wild, which it might be, and it'll probably suck. But it being like this other thing or inspired by this other thing is not a detriment, because like Breath of the Wild was probably influenced by things like Witcher 3 and Shadow of the Colossus and yes. other games like that. And I don't think that saying that Breath of the Wild takes influence from Shadow of the Colossus, it makes Breath of the Wild worse. It just means that things influence things, and that's okay. Calm down, internet.
But also, I think we should say that just because something uses the aesthetics of Breath of the Wild doesn't mean that game is going to play like Breath of the Wild.
Sure,
yeah, like Immortals.
Yeah, and you know, the more I hear about Pokemon Legends, it seems like it's going to play more like a Monster Hunter game.
Yeah, saying that Breath of the Wild. Saying that Pokemon Legends has like literally anything to do with Breath of the Wild is like such a surface level comparison. It's like you're. What the fuck are you saying? Do you know anything about this game?
I will say, I think the marketing wants you to think it's like yes. Breath of the Wild.
Oh, yes. Sure. But it's yeah. like...
But the marketing team taking notes and the development team taking notes for Breath of the Wild are two different things entirely.
Also, this is really funny. I was looking for the specific tweet that started it, because actually I recognize the Twitter that kicked it off, and the tweet's been deleted.
Oh good. That's funny.
So yeah, if anyone hasn't seen it, they're going to have no idea what we're talking about.
There was more than one tweet.
I would say there was one big tweet that kicked it off, and then it was everyone else responding to it. Or
was it like, the one with the four pictures of the four games?
Yeah, I'm not going to name who it was because I think that's kind of shitty.
I'm pretty sure I liked that. I'm pretty sure I liked the tweet.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Twitter right now. I'm pretty sure
it was mostly just a joke. Like the tweet itself was a joke about how all of the games had like a very similar shot as like mm-hmm. its key art, right. like a harmless. And people were like, it didn't like Breath of the Wild didn't invent cameras behind a person in a field. And it's like, that's not what we're. All right. So,
yeah, I mean, this conversation crops up every single time another trailer like this drops. Like it happened with Genshin Impact. It happened with yep. Pokemon Legends.
Well, in Genshin Impact was very admittedly.
Yes.
Very Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Like, and that's not a secret.
John, we were talking about the chemistry system in Breath of the Wild. Genshin Impact literally has that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's, I think this whole thing is just like a problem with Twitter as a format, which
yes.
if you let me talk about that, I can fucking go about that because I have some feelings there. But this is typical Twitter nonsense where yeah. I don't even care enough to figure out which side I think is the side that is being dumb, because it's just like, I don't care about what happens on Twitter anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the unfortunate thing that so much of games media discourse happens on Twitter. And so you can't escape it. And it's always going to be, you know, setting the topic for the day. But sometimes that topic is just dumb.
Well, there's also like sometimes you see stuff get retweeted. Like I saw a tweet get passed around where someone said when that weird structure got discovered on the moon the other day. And mm-hmm. someone was like, I think that's the set from where they faked the moon landing. And it's like an obvious joke because who the fuck would say that? And I see so many people, including people I know and think are relatively intelligent, passing it around as though it is an actual flat earther opinion. And it's like, what are you doing? This is you're clearly making a controversy out of nothing. And then I see someone comparing the Master Emerald in the Sonic 2 trailer to Kryptonite in the Zack Snyder movies, going, is Zack Snyder really was the template? And you look at this person's Twitter page, and they're a huge Zack Snyder fan. Everything they tweet is restore the Snyderverse and all that stuff. But they say, oh, I was totally joking. Of course I know what Sonic is. And then you do a search on their Twitter account, and they've never mentioned Sonic before. And I see people that I know and think are intelligent say, well, of course he was obviously joking. And it's like, Twitter's broken.
Yeah,
Twitter is broken.
Yeah. All that to say, Halo Infinite, great Breath of the Wild clone. Do you guys have any closing thoughts on Halo before we wrap this special presentation of Planet X Cube up?
You know, Halo, I feel very complicated about it. It's like my friends say that the sequels get a lot better and all that. That was supposed to be a joke on Danganronpa, and then no one laughed, but...
Nice one, Matt.
But I do think I feel similarly conflicted, where there is something in here that I like a lot, and there's a lot of stuff on top of it that I think are bad. And it's when all my friends say that Danganronpa's sequels improve on it so much, I hope that Halo Infinite's patches improve on it so much in the same way, because what I'm about to say, I think, applies to both of these games. There's a lot of stuff in there that feels really good, and I'm really, really interested in, but there's also just so much that feels like it's pushing me away. So I really want to see a version of this game that fixes all of that and is something that I can recommend and love without an asterisk, without conditions. Just good. And yeah. I really want to get to that point.
I would say, as much as I've complained about the open world and have kind of piggybacked on some of Matt's problems with the battle pass and multiplayer, it's still so incredibly fun. And the sandbox, the movement, the shooting is very, very good. And every time that I play a nice long session of multiplayer with y'all, it's always so much fun.
And that multiplayer has taken me to 4 a.m. multiple times,
yes,
by the way.
It's so good. It's hard to stop. Big Team Paddle is the best.
Unless you end up in an endless capture the flag game.
Yeah, or it's Stockpile.
Yeah.
If it's Zones or Slayer, it's a really good time. And also, you know, in the campaign, like that might have been the perfect way to do weapon durability is Halo Infinite.
I mean, that's kind of what ammo is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Granted, this game is way more friendly about ammo than any Halo has ever been. Like,
yeah,
they,
that's true.
They drown you in ammo.
I mean, those opening linear missions, I carried the standard pistol and assault rifle through the entire thing.
Yep.
And then they have like little weapon lockers everywhere. So,
yeah, I think it's a very good... I'm terrified to know where this game was a year ago when Microsoft first wanted to release
absolutely.
It must have been
a disaster.
Still rushed to hit a holiday.
Alex, I wanted to ask you something about this. You're playing on PC too, right?
Right.
You don't have as much of a powerful PC as I do, right?
I do not. I have a 1060.
Okay, a 1000 series, even better. How does it run?
It runs kind of poor on the campaign specifically, because there's like a lot of pop in during multiplayer sessions. It's actually quite good. Mm-hmm. Especially if it had at medium settings, but the campaign is not great.
Yeah, because this is something that I was talking to John about earlier today, where it's like, I've got a total beast of a PC. I've got an RTX 3060. I got an AMD Ryzen 5. I have top of the line stuff. I'm struggling to get above 100 frames per second. And I don't want to be like, oh, woe is me. My $2,000 computer can only get 100 frames per second. But it's like, if I'm not hitting my targets, then I'm terrified what it's like for people with like regular computers.
Right. If you're not getting there, then who is?
Yeah. So yeah. Like I can only imagine how this game runs for you, because in campaign, I'm like usually above 60, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like
I've had a couple of crashes. Oh. I'll just say that. Yeah.
So Matt, when you're because something I mentioned, like when me and Matt were talking about this, is this was another instance of me saying I think they prioritized the console experience, because even on Xbox One, like base model Xbox One, this runs pretty stable. Obviously at a lower target frame rate and a lower target resolution, but like it's stable.
I just think it's easier to develop for two consoles than it is for every PC.
Not for right, sure. But you would but... think that like Matt's PC ought to be able to hit around where my Xbox Series X is hitting.
Sure.
Yeah. So like to that end, and like I've checked, like my PC is equivalent to an Xbox Series X.
But I think this my Series X might be, and you may have like higher presets on your textures or something, I suppose. But like as far as performance goes, like I'm pretty sure like I'm rendering at, I believe, a higher resolution than you are. And the Series X is hitting like 100 to 110 frames per second. So it's matching to outperforming it, which is weird.
Yeah. Which I mean, it does come down to like, what is the port? Because
yeah,
how much of this is being brute forced?
Right.
Because like that does matter. I mean, I'm sorry to bring up the forbidden games, but like with emulators and stuff, like the fact that you're brute forcing stuff, like PS2 games aren't going to run great on your PC just because they're PS2 games. The emulators got to take a ton of power just to brute force it. So
yeah,
how much is Halo doing the same thing?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, I think it is. It's a game that was developed for Xbox One and it's been upgraded to Series X. But once again, that feels like it should run just fine on PC. But yeah, it does. All this to say, it does feel like they kind of like just barely slid across the finish line at the last second. Like mm-hmm. the game they released is a function. Like this isn't Cyberpunk. Like it is a functional, working, good fit game. But there are definitely spots where you're like, that could be polished up a little bit.
I think if this game had released on time last year, it would be up there with Cyberpunk.
Oh, I have to imagine it would be a disaster.
Yeah, so, like,
it's very
no
telling
way.
That they've staggered major components of this game from each other.
Yeah, I mean, we still don't have co-op for the campaign.
We don't have co-op, yeah.
We don't have a mission select for the campaign.
Yeah.
There are very basic buttons missing still.
Yeah, if you miss things and you're trying to go for 100% completion, in some of those missions, like, you can't
fuck you,
go
play
back.
The game again.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't. You have to start over. Yeah. Yeah, I'll look for skulls in the overworld, but I'm not going to go back and do the missions again until they add the mission select, which I think they've said they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Which like, it's incredible that Microsoft allowed them to delay this game for a full year, because like, you can look at it, last year you could buy a Mountain Dew and get a code for a challenge swap that expired by the time the game came out.
Yeah, no, well, and it is, I mean, it's obviously it's out on Xbox One and PC as well, but like this feels like the Series X and S is like killer app. So yeah. It's coming out a year after the system came out. And it's good, but
I think Microsoft made the right choice to let them delay it a full year, but it was obviously an extremely difficult choice that speaks to how dire things must have been.
Yeah, and they very clearly didn't want to go any more than a year.
I'm curious, did was the delay announced before or after Cyberpunk's release?
No. It was before, because it was right after that showcase where they're showing off the game, Then you had Craig the Brute that got memed on to hell and back.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to say it was like late
end of summer. Yeah, that was end
yeah.
of summer. Because then Cyberpunk wasn't until okay. last December, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, December, November.
It was like the November area, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were paying attention, then you knew it was going to be shit way before that, to be honest.
So that's, yeah, it would be fascinating to see, you know, if they had done the same thing with Cyberpunk.
I don't know. Where's Cyberpunk right now? Is it better a year later? Is it?
It's had some patches. So I actually decided to restart it on Series X because I was like, okay, this system can brute force its way through the Xbox One X version. And like, that's okay. Like, it's a decent game like that. But they're not like their actual like upgrade patches aren't coming until like early next year, around the same time as the Witcher 3 upgrade, I think.
And I would say that now, at the end of 2021, it's kind of reasonable to say, yeah, just buy it on Series X or PS5, like it's an exclusive for those consoles, and you'll have a good experience.
Don't play it on PS4 or Xbox One, like, for the love of Christ.
When it launched over a year ago, like, people are still having trouble getting these new consoles. Mm-hmm. We've just had an extra year of people getting them, so.
Well, and you have to remember, this was not launched as a Series X and PS5 game.
It was not.
No.
It was launched. It like they released a special edition Xbox One X for it. Like, mm-hmm. So yeah, no, don't play it on the consoles it was released for, unless it's PC. I hear it's fine on PC.
Mm-hmm. But I
bet if you have the specs for it, yeah.
Yeah.
I bet that if Halo Infinite had launched last year, it would have been in a similar state to Cyberpunk. And I think if they hadn't delayed it in the summer, then as soon as Cyberpunk came out, they would have delayed it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a good call. They did a good job. Yeah. But with that, I think we'll call that an episode. So yeah, thank you, gentlemen, very much for joining me to talk about everybody's favorite Nintendo game. Who knows? Maybe one day Game Pass will be on Switch and you'll be able to stream Halo Infinite.
Master Chief for Smash. Right, guys?
I mean, I did kind of want that. I'm not
take
gonna
it.
Lie.
Honest, I don't think it's like outrageous at
He's
all.
He's a better choice than Geno.
Yeah, probably or a more Waluigi. Realistic choice than Geno.
Honestly, like Master Chief Collection on Switch would be kind of nice.
I'm a little surprised four. It hasn't happened. Kind of.
Yeah, the first four would run.
Give me Halo with gyro aiming.
Oh God, that'd be so good. Yeah, Microsoft is a weird company, so like, never say never. But yeah. Call that an episode. Thank you for listening. If you're listening to this in a place where you can review podcasts, hey, you could do that, perhaps. If you want to talk to us about your opinions on Halo or Danganronpa or anything else, you can email us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can follow us on Twitter at connectivitynwr. And
we're gonna get plenty of emails if any of the 7 Danganronpa fans in the world are listening to this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, you better write in. If you're one of them, you have an obligation.
Now you have to come back to defend yourself.
I'm currently installing 2 on Steam, so.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.